Hey.
Yeah, you. You don't want to mess with me, man. I just joined a gang called Satan's Kneecaps. We own the road, and you better get lost. See us coming down the highway, roll up your windows and knock your doors. We'll tear up your town with our cutout exhausts, man. Satan's Kneecaps are a bunch of bad mothers. Everyone, hop on your hogs because we're talking kids on bikes for this episode of Attack of the Killer Podcast. Yeah.
Attention, planet Earth and beyond. Stay tuned for Attack of the Killer Podcast. Attack of the Killer Podcast. Attack of the Killer Podcast. Attack of the Killer Podcast.
What?
Hello, everybody. It appears that I have got the theme to the show wrong. The guys told me during the theme that the topic Kids on Bikes is about children on bicycles and not about motorcycle gangs. So I got that Satan's Kneecaps tattoo on my chest for nothing. This is episode 293. 293, people. Whoa. It's called Kids on Bikes, which is a subgenre of films. Usually taking place in the 1980s, but doesn't have to, where a group of kids are, you know, kind of the main protagonists. And a lot of the times, but again, not always, they're riding around on bikes. Now, Attack of the Killer Podcast is a horror movie podcast where a group of friends get together with a topic and we talk about films within that topic. We are just friends hanging out, having a good old time, talking about horror movies. So there may be spoilers.
There will be spoilers.
There will be, yes. Okay. It's been determined. If you like our show, may I interest you in becoming an attacker? You can help support the show by simply going to jointheattackerstalk.com, pick the tier that you like, and boom! You're an attacker. Your support helps the show out big time. But then you also get all kinds of rewards and perks for becoming an attacker. You can get your own membership card, certificate, and exclusive sticker. There's all kinds of bonus content you can get as well, like bonus episodes that'll fill that void in your pathetic life while you wait for the next full episode to come out. You get our YouTube shows, such as video updates, killer critiques, and the Emmy Award-watching Insane Mike's 1-Minute Top 10 lists. And there's so much more you can get by becoming an attacker, such as, and including, not exclusively including, but including, shout-outs on the website and on the show, like these amazing people.
That's right. Like Timothy Linerer, Roman Doppelfeld, Larry Watanabe, Brett Royer, Seth Key, Jessica Irish, Chris Cook, Brian Godsell, Stephen Sitter, Brandy Moore, Andrew Moeller, Rod Hutchinson, Carmen DeHay, Gabriel Arano, Jacob Book, Andrew Bentler, Casey Kelderman, Tony the... What was I supposed to call him?
Oh, crap. I don't remember.
Tony the Big Dick Miller... Mike Clayton, Rose Talashoma, Marcus Rude, Abe Kirshner, Lisa Cavalier, Holly Berg, Emily Randolph, Bill Fisher, and Greg Diedrich. Thanks, guys. What a list of awesome people.
So go to jointheattackers.com and become an attacker today. That's jointheattackers.com. And now it is time to introduce you to the podcast crew. He's super mad at the kids in his neighborhood. Every morning when he checks his mail, the kids race past his house, running him over. This happens every single day. He says it's a vicious cycle. Tad!
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening.
When he was a kid, he said the hardest part of learning to ride his bike was the pavement. Jason!
That's so true. That's so true. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and being here. We really, really do appreciate it.
Now, speaking of hitting the pavement, here's Tad with what we watched.
What we watched.
I'm not going to lie. I'm sitting here updating my letterbox because I completely just forgot to add things to it. So while I'm doing that, Jason, what have you watched?
Man, that happens way too often.
here lately, yeah.
And it's my goddamn segment.
I know. I've only got a couple movies. I did finish up the Crowded Room series on Apple TV. That's got the Spider-Man kid in it, Tom Holland. It's fucking awesome, man. Definitely recommend that. But movie-wise, did I mention this last time? I can't remember. Pinball, The Man Who Saved the Game.
No, but I did see that on your letterbox, yeah.
Heck yeah. It's really great. Came out 2022. The dramatic comedy is based on the true story of writer and pinball wizard Roger Sharp chronicling his journey to overturn New York City's 35-year ban on pinball because it was banned in New York.
What?
Yeah, man. It's
all the shit that goes on in New York and they ban pinball?
Because it was gambling. And watch the movie to see what that even means. But yeah, it's fucking madness. The journey, this one guy who really just loves pinball. It's like his one thing he loves and is good at.
Dude, I've
and he just kept it. He just went in hard and just made it happen.
I listen to a podcast where one of the hosts is a big pinball head, and every once in a blue moon he'll go down that rabbit hole, and it's kind of like what Tad was talking about with the moped guys, man. They're serious about pinball.
Oh yeah, it's not a joking matter. And then I watched an A24 movie. I know, shocker. But you're not going to believe this one. It just came out this week on Apple TV.
Talk to me? Oh.
No. And it's called Stephen Curry, Underrated. It's a basketball documentary on NBA player Stephen Curry.
I just watched him on Hot Ones right before I recorded this. Yeah.
Yeah, man, I've followed him a lot over the years. I mean, if you know me, you know we do NFL football and things like that. But I also have dabbled over the years in the NBA. I like watching that, and I've been watching him for years and years. And that dude's just incredible. And it's just a sports documentary, really, but it's compelling because he was, you know, just an undersized, short little kid that wasn't supposed to be good.
He got drafted to a big college.
Yeah.
And he was just told, like, over and over again he'd never be anything.
Yep. And he just overcame and became one of the greatest players to ever play the game. And he's still playing. So it was great. And that's what I watched.
Excellent. How about you, Mike?
Well, I... After all this time, I still didn't end up watching very many movies. The frick? But I have been watching some shows. Words are hard. I just finished the newest season. I think it's the end of the season. They wrapped it up pretty good at the end of the episode. But the Righteous Gemstones, love it so much. And
I still haven't even. Dude. I can't click on it. It looks too dumb.
It's hilarious.
Even though Tad made us watch that whole season of his stupid show.
That's not stupid at all.
Well, I guess I could have put that on my list,
too. I know,
I
could have, too.
Emmy-nominated show, you mean.
Oh, what's it called again?
I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. But Righteous Gemstones, I mean, I'm such a Danny McBride fan. And
I know Halloween Ends, Halloween Kills.
The shows, man, like Vice Principals is awesome, and Eastbound and Down. And it's like each time he does one of these series, it's still Danny McBride, but I feel like the series is mature as they go on.
He's like, not a one note hack. We've said that, but he does
one note really good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like when Will Ferrell had that thing where it was like, what if he played an idiot, but he's in NASCAR? Well, this time he's in basketball. Well, this time he's a politician. Well,
he's
this time
ice skater.
He's a, yeah.
Yeah. I don't care. It's still good.
Yeah. It's funny.
And he's got a good cast around him too. You know, John Goodman plays the dad of these three dysfunctional kids.
Walter Goggins.
That are all, no. not Walter, that they're all in charge of the like biggest church in the world. And so they're all like pastors, and it is so funny and so wrong. And so
poking fun at religion?
Big time.
All right.
Oh yeah. Especially the televangelists. Cause that's the whole series is about. Gosh dang it, just blanked on his name.
Walter Adam Goggins.
Adam Levine. No.
He is on the show.
Sure he is.
Which one's Walter, whatever you're saying?
Froggins. Walter Goggins. He was in House of a Thousand Corpses as the cop that gets shot by Otis. He's on that show. He's one of the main characters.
Yeah, he looks like that other actor. He always does to me. He looks like Michael Biehn. He always kind of reminds me of him. But
oh. Is that the... Okay. Anyway.
You have a Google machine right in front of you. It's so funny. Just keep talking.
He plays Baby Billy Freeman.
Okay, yeah. Okay. He's Baby Billy. That's what I thought. That's what I thought you were talking about. He's really funny in it, too. He's really good. Oh, he's so good. He's so good. But this...
You thought I was just saying Walter Goggins for fun.
Which is why you say it.
It is fun to say.
You guys need to watch it so I can talk about it, because especially this last episode, just it goes so off the rails in the third act that it's, I just stopped and said, "What's happening right now?"
I will give it a chance, because you sat through a whole season of I Think You Should Leave, so I owe you.
Well, and you know that I have to wait for someone else to recommend it.
Oh, I know. Yeah, so. I know. I've been reaching out to people.
Infiltrate.
Yeah. Uh-huh. To me, his humor, his style of humor, I love, but I can also see where it is off-putting to people, because the show revolves around the three children of this pastor, and they are the worst human beings on the planet. They are just awful, awful people. And there's times where I know most people, even me included, are just like, why am I watching this show? I hate these people. But there's still some redeeming qualities once in a while. And, especially when things kind of come together. And it's just, it does have a really good cast around Danny McBride that, you know, well, John Goodman, I'll watch in anything. And yeah, there's a lot of cool people in it. Anyway, it's awesome. Watch it so I can talk about it more.
I like him in This Is the End, where he sort of plays like exaggerated version of himself. That shit's funny.
There, I will say this, you know, how he always has like, he just always has this like asshole smug.
Arrogant, yeah.
Arrogant demeanor about him, and he tries to talk smarter than he is, so his words sound even dumber.
Yeah, I love that.
There's a lot of flashbacks in the show when they were kids. And they found like the perfect kid to play, the young version of him, doing the exact same thing, just trying to talk bigger than he is, but sounding dumber. And it's the kid does a really good job of playing a young Danny McBride. I'll get off of that. I also just started, Simon and I just started watching that Twisted Metal series. We're like three episodes into that. And that's really good too. Really funny. A lot of cool action. Definitely recommend that.
On Peacock, right?
Yep, it's on Peacock.
I was very confused because I was not a big Twisted Metal player. I'm familiar with it. It's part of pop culture. But then I see like the images and a little bit of the like ads and stuff. And I see, is it Sweet Tooth, the clown?
Yeah.
And people keep saying it's played by Will Arnett. And I'm like, when did Will Arnett get man boobs? And I find out that like the clown version is played by Samoa Joe, the wrestler.
Yeah.
Is there a like human version that's Will Arnett? Like, I don't get what's happening.
It's Will Arnett's voice. Because, you know, Sweet Tooth is wearing a mask through the whole thing. So whenever he's talking, they can easily just overdub it.
Okay.
And so it's Will Arnett's voice. And his voice matches the character really, really well. So
okay.
That was pretty cool.
I was very confused. I'm like, damn, Will Arnett went full method for this thing and got big. Like, ugh.
Sweet Tooth is definitely, I mean, he's always been the standout character in the game series. But he's definitely the standout character in the show. but they put too much emphasis on him in the trailers for it because he's only in two episodes. I'll spoil that. He's only in two episodes.
How many episodes season?
I think it's 10.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Okay. And they're quick watch because they're only like 30 minutes apiece around there.
That's so. More digestible.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah.
I love a good 30 minutes.
And, God, what's his name? Anthony. Yeah. Anthony.
Bourdain.
Edwards.
Kiedis.
Yeah. Played Falcon in the Marvel movies.
Mackie.
Yeah. He's the star of it, and I'm impressed. He's got some comedy chops.
Oh, he can be really funny, yeah. Yeah. I love him in The Night Before. He's fucking hilarious as the football player who's using steroids.
Oh, okay. I've only ever seen him in the Marvel movies, so watching him do comedy was like...
You've never seen The Night Before?
No, no.
Okay.
That's that Seth Rogen one, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Christmas time, you'll have to come on first time because I watch that every year.
Oh, okay. Yeah, totally. And then the last thing I'll talk about, the one movie that I did end up getting to watch over the weekend, Brandy and I watched Paint.
Oh,
from this year.
That trailer, the poster looked interesting, and then the trailer kind of turned me off.
Wow. Why? What was it about the trailer?
I don't know. I just couldn't imagine 90 minutes of that. How was it? Sorry to interrupt you.
No, no, it's fine. Maybe it's a little slow. Owen Wilson basically plays Carl Nart. What?
Bob Ross.
Well, basically. Whoa. He's not technically Bob Ross, but he's Vermont's number one public television painter until a younger, better artist does her own show immediately after his and steals everything and everyone from him.
Wow.
And he does not say wow in the movie. Brandy and I could not find one moment where he said wow. but his performance is, it's very Bob Ross the whole thing. Even when he's agitated, and there's like there's some moments where they planned that, and it's really funny where he like marches into his boss's office and, you know, all pissed off, but he doesn't say anything, and he just looks as calm as ever. And Stephen Root plays the boss, and he's like,
"Whoa!"
Dude. He's like, "Whoa! You've never been this mad at me before."
Yeah.
Even though he said nothing, and his demeanor is still the same.
That's funny.
Yeah. So it's got some good jokes like that, but it's dry. You know, especially if your main character, who's going through things and still maintains that Bob Ross demeanor through the whole thing.
Yeah.
So it kind of reminds me maybe a little of like some of that Wes Anderson style humor. That's why I think you might appreciate it. But
Owen Wilson, yes.
Yeah, maybe that's why I think it's like Wes Anderson, and I'm probably wrong. But I liked it. It was good. Anyway, that's what I watched.
Tad, what'd you watch?
I thought I hadn't watched it. Then I realized I did. I'm going to count these. I watched, Joe Bob. So
yeah.
Week 9 was the one that was during SNAF, so I did not get to that live. But I've caught up on Alligator, which is great with Joe Bob.
Love
he did
that,
like
really.
A an animal double feature. So he did Alligator Grizzly, and I haven't gotten to Grizzly yet.
Perfect double feature.
Yeah,
perfect.
And then the finale, he did The Living Dead at Manchester Morgue and Day of the Dead. Another great double feature. Obviously seen Day of the Dead, probably the, you know, maybe besides Halloween on his show, like the one movie I've seen the most, but having the three leads in there was fucking cool.
Very cool, yeah.
And then I had never seen Living Dead at Manchester Morgue. I love when I discover a movie on there. I've heard of it, seen the posters, you know, trailers, everything, knew about it, just had never gotten to it. And so watching it with Joe Bob was awesome. I really, really like that. Gonna have to pick that up on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I like that movie, even then, without Joe Bob.
Yeah, it has some of the creepiest zombies.
Oh, yeah.
And then I will pivot, and I went to the theater and saw one movie, and it was Barbie, and I loved it.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I ranted about to you guys on the car ride the entire time, like how fantastic it was. So Highly recommend Barbie, and it's a lot of fun, and it's really smart and cool.
Awesome.
That's what I watched. I guess, trying to think if I watched any TV. I think I watched a lot of Food Network.
Mm-hmm.
Every time Jason turns on YouTube TV, he's like, Dad's watching Beat Bobby Flay and Guy's Grocery Games again. Son of a bitch.
I love all of Food Network, except for Guy's Grocery Games. I just can't get into it.
I love that. I don't like Barbecue Brawls. Not my favorite. But I watched that last night for like 2 hours, so I guess I'm lying.
Yeah. Beat Bobby Flay, Chopped. Yeah, all day. Sorry.
I want to say, Triple D's awesome. You give me shit all the time about watching the same movies over and over again.
Uh-huh.
I have
all the time.
I have 3 or 4 unfinished movies, on my Roku right now that I've started and didn't finish because I tried. I tried like I'm gonna watch something new while I'm working on things. And then I miss about half. No, I'm working on things, so I'm missing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's
no. I always thought when you put a movie on in the background that's totally cool because it equates to like listening to music while you're working on stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I just don't think you should be able to count it as watching it because you're not actually watching it.
Well, that's obviously very true. Yes. With like 4 movies that I have no idea what's going on, and I've watched halfway through it.
Yeah, that's all.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's still a discount.
No.
All right, let's get into the movies. Bikes. I'm going to. What?
Bikes, huh?
Yeah, kids on bikes.
Let's jump on our bikes and go to the movies.
Yeah.
You know what to say.
Yeah.
No. Great, great transition.
Set you up and yeah.
Yeah.
Alley-ooped and he missed the ball.
Let's go, guys. Okay. I'm going to start us off this time around with a little film from 1987, and it's called The Gate.
There is a passageway to the most evil place you can imagine. A gate behind which the demons wait to take back what was once theirs. And now, someone has opened the gate.
Now, this is weird, tearing sound in there. It's the decomposed corpse of her dead father.
Oh no.
He's tearing out hair by the hands.
I'm calling the police.
You got demons.
I mean, you guys were serious about that demon stuff? Demons? What kind?
Dad! You've been bad.
They have opened the gate. Pray it's not too late.
That rhymed. When two young boys are left home alone... Did you take the needle off the record? Okay. When two young boys are left home alone, they accidentally released a horde of demons from their backyard through a large hole in the ground. The Gate is a supernatural horror film directed by, Tuber Takis.
Bless you.
He directed I, Madman. He directed Gate 2, but he did a lot of like television and a lot of cable films, like Sci-Fi Channel films and Hallmark Channel Christmas movies. It stars Stephen Dorff in his feature film debut. But for me, the real stars of this film are the special effects, man. You know, I'm always annoyed when you hear, like, on a commentary track or you hear people talk about special effects, like, from the 80s or 90s, and they're explaining it to a modern audience that the thing they always say is, this was before CGI, as if, like, they're trying to rationalize their effects. I hate it so much. But I'll say that if any film truly deserves that disclaimer, it's this one, because the effects in this film, they do such a good job. They pull every trick, every effects trick in the book that was available at that time to have to do these small demons that are, like, running around doing things, from, like, you know, having little people in costumes, with oversized props, to
force,
like,
perspective,
force perspectives to, yeah, like the split screen. What's that called when they do the split screen stuff?
Dioptic thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And rewatching it again, like, even those shots are just utterly amazing to me, because usually when you see those kind of shots, you can tell where that line is, but you can't. First of all, you can't really see it. But then I swear to God, there's, like, stuff crossing that line. Like, when she's out in the yard and the little demon guys are running up on her and she runs back into the house, like, her feet cross the entire frame when it shows the shot of the steps, and those demons are, like, right behind her. And I'm like, how in the hell did they pull? Anyway, and just the designs of the little dudes are pretty cool looking. I like them a lot. So just always have been really impressed with the effects in this film. They look awesome. But I think we talked about it before. This is a good. Yeah. This would be a great beginner film for the younger people that we want to turn into horror fans. It's probably a bit scarier and creepier than
push it a little
than, yeah, say, like, Monster Squad or other films that fall into that category. But again, it's not gory. There's no nudity. There's very little language. There's really not even any kills in it. Like, the worst part is, like, you know, the dog dies, but spoilers, the dog is okay. It comes back at the end. So there's your spoiler alert. Anyway, so nobody really even dies in this movie. But I've seen it several times, and I love it every single time. The nerdy kid with glasses, when he's, like, screaming in terror, the face he makes is creepier than the little demon guys. Them buck teeth and those glasses. But anyway, that's beside the point. Definitely check it out. The Gate. What do you guys think?
I too have seen this several times, and I definitely wanted to go second so Dad could maybe finish on a higher note. But
oh no.
No, what? I don't. It's for me, this movie suffers so bad from the writing. It's so slow, it's so bad. The writing is bad. The dialogue that these characters say are so cheesy and dumb. I'm sorry. I know this is somebody's favorite movie, and I don't mean to shit on it. The writing's hard for me. Also, I wished that, or I think that those two boys should have probably been flipped casting-wise, because the punk rock friend so looks nerdier than the main guy, where Stephen Dorff would have. I mean, it's a much bigger part, and he deserves the bigger part, but I think he would have been a better badass friend instead of...
The scene where the badass friend is rocking... Yeah, yeah, he's rocking out to, like, death metal music in his bedroom.
Don't buy it.
It's hilarious.
Don't buy it.
It's worth it.
And then...
I mean...
Yeah.
Come on. Like, look back at pictures of your friends that were metalheads in the 80s. They were fucking dorks with big glasses and bad haircuts.
Okay? I'm not saying anything in case they're listening.
Well, that was my next thing is it's bad haircuts. Like, I know Mike loves the poofy hair from the 80s.
Oh, it's so hot. The Aquanet
style stuff. But that friend's hair was never in style. It is just a mess of weeds on the top of her head. It doesn't even, there's nothing stylish about, like, no one had that. It's so,
I challenge you to go back to through your senior year.
It was never that bad. But, so, yeah, I mean, I watched the movie. It's not bad. It's fine. It's totally good. But yeah, the 100% saving grace for all of it is those little fellas at the end, man. All that forced perspective stuff is fucking...
Little fellas.
It's, I mean, it's so much better than the rest of the movie. It's so fucking good. Those effects. It's just way better than it should be in this cheap little movie. Like, it's impressive as shit.
Impressive as hell. Now,
it is.
Not all the effects hold up. No. When you get the big demon at the end, you could definitely tell the optical effects in those shots. But, man, I don't know. Unless, because I watched this on Tubi. I have it on DVD. And so I don't have it on Blu-ray. So I don't know if you could tell in higher definition or not. But, man.
But, yeah, it's 100% worth watching to get to the end with all the little fellas. Man, they're so fucking awesome. They really are.
Even so that there's that scene, like I'm watching this movie because I've seen it so many times. I'm watching it almost like frame by frame of where like it's when the nerd metalhead falls into the hole and he starts getting attacked by the little demon guys. And again, their movements and the overall look of those demon guys and the noises they make are just so, it's like cute, borderline, scary as hell, you know? And they start attacking him, and there's that one that bites him in the neck, and he grabs it and throws it.
Yeah.
And just the way they do those shots, going from different, from effect to effect, because obviously that's a little prop one that he grabs and throws.
Nail it, man.
And but when it lands, it's a little guy in a costume that stands up and makes little grunting noises. It's so good.
Yeah.
Made me think of like Army of Darkness when they use some of the stop motion stuff, you know, like little ashes and stuff. I'm like, this is somehow better than like a big budget Universal picture in ways. But
from almost 10 years later.
Right. Yeah. It's impressive. Were you done, Jason?
Yeah, I was done. I was hoping you'd just bring her home.
Yeah, I'm going to bring it. Oh, no, what if I came on and shit on it too? No, I discovered this movie like late. There's no nostalgia for me at all. I discovered this on DVD as an adult, and I adore it. I love it. I can't believe you think it's slow. I think it's so much fun. It takes me back to... I put it in a category as like Goonies, Monster Squad, like kids' adventures.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's right up there, but it has a little sinister tone to it, so maybe even a little better. Not so much as Monster Squad. It's hard to beat Monster Squad, but like I love the metal kid. I love the playing the records backwards and the gate and the hole in the ground. It just takes me back to like when me and my friends would fuck around and do things we weren't supposed to and get in trouble. And as I told you guys this past weekend when we were hanging out, like, I had an older sister, so I always would try to do anything I could to hang out with her hot friends. So when they're doing the thing and they levitate him, you know, stiff as a board, all that shit, you know, I never did that, but I can just remember my sister having slumber parties and me clearly not wanted at this party, but forcing myself in somehow. You know, it just is like a thing for me. And I like I said, I love the nerdy friend who comes over all the time. Cause I always had like one friend I latched onto at that age, you know, and just, I don't know, maybe it's weird because it's not nostalgic cause I didn't see it until I was adult, but it still does sort of take me back to a simpler time. And then every time I watch it, I get sad when the dog dies, even though I know that he's okay at the end, but that, like zombie old man creature thing, that's scary as hell.
Oh yeah.
Like there's some really scary shit in this movie it's cool as hell. And to me it's like not quite a gateway, it's like the step. If like a cigarette is a gateway to weed, this is the weed. It's not cocaine, like, you know, Evil Dead 2 or, you know, I don't even know what, but it's weed, you know, it'll give you a nice little high. It's more naughty than, you know, Wolfman's Got Nards, but
You know what else is scary? The most irresponsible parents of all time.
No shit.
Jesus.
And the irresponsible sister, too.
Stephen
Dorff's character, he is crying the whole time. Please let me call our goddamn parents. She's like, no, I'll get in trouble. The dog dies. No.
The dog dies. Call. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, okay, now's the time. Like, the whole movie, he's whining to her. You know, we need to call mom and dad. I agree with her at first, like, they don't need to know we had people over and you levitated to the ceiling, whatever. But, you know, when the dog starts dying and weird shit starts happening at the house, maybe call mom and dad. They might want to know.
And another thing that made me super happy is the very first scene of this movie, kids on bikes. And I'll happily report all three of them definitely have kids on bikes. It's great.
Yep. I was kind of worried when I put this on the list because I couldn't remember it. Because, yeah, as far as kids on bikes go, it's like one scene that's completely irrelevant. But they're still there. The neighbor bikes
kid,
are there.
I was going to say, the neighbor kid rides his bike over almost every time. So.
Yeah.
There's another scene in this where it's a little earlier on. When things are starting to get weird and they're getting suspicious of the hole, and you know the hole is opened back up because it got covered up at one point, and they're sitting around talking around this hole, and you're seeing the dirt kind of start to fall in on the hole from the sides because there's something moving inside the dirt, like almost like the hole is alive itself. Again, another really cool effect. I'm assuming super cheap and easy, but effective. And I'm always captivated by that shot of the hole, the dirt falling in the hole on its own.
Because if it means that that's a set that's built, it's like, Jesus, why'd you go to all that trouble for this cheap little movie? But you know, it's way more elaborate than it probably should be. If it's really hands in there making that stuff move.
So cool. I can't back up the slow pace, and it could be just because of its nostalgia, and I accept it, and I've seen it so many times, but I always kind of felt like things happen almost too fast in this movie, because we go from, like, the tree fell over, there's a hole in the yard, to, like, it's a gateway to hell in a bat in an eye, you know? Like, what are the chances of this hole being this gateway?
Yeah, thank God he had that album, or they'd have never figured it out.
I mean,
it's a little convenient, but
yeah.
All of it is in that record.
But Tad, do you have any good trivia for this one?
Yeah, way to put me on the spot because I forgot.
We can cut that out and move on.
No, I can pull it up. I actually have the IMDb FC. Which some of it you've already mentioned, like the small demonic minions are played by actors in rubber suits shot in forced perspective. But the logo on the back of Terry's jacket is that of the Killer Dwarfs, a heavy metal band from Toronto, Ontario area, who were known for their offbeat sense of humor. So a real band.
Sweet.
Great name.
This is Stephen Dorff's debut film. Terry's back patch when he's first seen is for the band Venom, who sang the song The Seven Gates of Hell in 1984. Yeah. A little connection there. The writer, Michael Nankin, was originally planned for directing the film, but that didn't happen. Writer Michael Nankin, again, based the script on specific things from his childhood. For example, he had a best friend named Terry. Not a breast friend, but a best friend.
Oh, I wish I had a breast friend named Terry.
And that's I'm pretty that much...
I'm cutting that out. Yeah, I was going to say... Don't worry.
There's plenty of other things, but that was what I see that's pretty interesting. So
nice.
Awesome. Thanks. All right, so Jason, what's our next movie?
Oh, guys, it's time to get dark. It's time to stop all this laughing. It's time for some super dark times.
Guys, my parents rented that movie, True Lies.
Don't do it.
I've watched that scene where she strips over and over and over.
The Silver Surfer is the loneliest dude in the galaxy.
I mean, the Punisher is pretty haunted.
You have no idea what you're talking about.
Allison Bannister.
Hi.
Would you?
I don't know. I like her.
Yeah, I like her too.
He's got a thing for me. I like you, Zach.
She's hot, like Charlie's sister.
Shut up.
Oh my God.
Yeah!
Let me see that.
Give it back.
You want it? Come and get it.
Stop! Stop!
Remember Daryl Harper? Got a call from his mom. Guess he never came home last night. Did you see him at school today? Are you okay?
There's just a lot going on right now.
Josh?
We should go back.
What?
I don't know, but I just keep thinking of his mom.
Don't go back there.
You need to listen to me.
No, you need to listen to yourself.
You're scared all the time.
Stay away from home.
If anyone asks, we're not friends.
Not getting any sleep. I know how you feel.
No, you don't know how I feel!
What's happening? We're friends.
Teenager Zach and Josh have been best friends their whole lives. But when a gruesome accident leads to a cover-up, the secret drives a wedge between them and propels them down a rabbit hole of escalating paranoia and violence. This movie's from 2017. Directed by Kevin Phillips, written by Ben Collins and Luke Piotrowski. This movie fucking rocked my world back in 2017. I know it's in my top 10. I wouldn't be surprised if it was in my top 5. It's just a fucking dirty, gritty story that, I don't know, the way, because of its grittiness, or even just the way that, like, the film's colored, I don't know, it just feels more real. It just feels that, you know, there's no name actors. I also thought that, like, cinematography was outstanding in this. And there's some really unique, like, some following pan shots that are just not normal, that just help make, put you in the scenes, and just a, excuse me, fucking, like, because this could really fucking happen, and probably has. It's just fucking bleak and depressing, and there's just, it just never lets up, and it just spirals into just never, into the worst that you think it's going to be, and fuck, it's awesome for that. I mean, it's a hard watch. I wasn't looking forward to, I mean, I was looking forward to it, but I wasn't, and man, I love it, man. It's so good. Did you see it back then, Mike?
I did.
Okay.
And I wasn't sure. I mean, I don't know if I had forgotten how dark it was.
Yeah, I feel like it is just basically an A24 type film.
Oh, it's very A24 so, type, but
I wasn't sure if you'd watched it on your own before or not.
And okay, so, you know, I complain. Well, all right. My brain is all over the place right now. I just want to say that, you know, yeah, I forgot how dark it was, or maybe it felt darker
it's
after what we've been going
dark.
Through, but my plan was is to kind of have some variation and, you know, in some of these movies, and, you know, and it was either like this one or Summer of 84 of like,
just
not all the kids on bike movies are going to be silly fun.
Yeah.
you know, when I complain about A24 movies being slow and stuff, and I think part of the difference for me with this particular film, that on the surface it could come off as slow, but not necessarily for me, because we get to that moment pretty early, and it's like you said, the characters feel real grounded, feel real. You know, I can look at these kids and connect with them as far as, kids I knew that were similar in high school. And when that moment happens, the rest of the movie is just, you're just on edge the whole time for various reasons. So as the movie takes its time in the next half of the movie, it doesn't feel slow because not only, one, am I invested, but two, I'm on the edge of my seat. Like, this could go and is going to, no matter what, is going to go horribly wrong.
There's no happy ending.
There's no way there could be a happy ending in this.
And maybe 824-ish stuff has more possibility of supernaturally things or things that are going to confuse you to the plot. This is very fucking grounded. This is very real. There's, yeah, so dark.
Yeah.
Super dark. I was trying to, like, while you guys were talking, trying to find, like, the, you know, year end, because I think this either made my list or I said it would have made my list if I was, like, hesitant, maybe because it's not completely straight. But I think I did make my list, and I argued that it is horror because it's scarier than anything else on the list because of realism. We've all been, obviously not in this heavy a situation, but we've all been in a situation where we fucked up and it felt like the end of the world. Like, things, and you're like fucking deep. And as the movie goes on, like Mike said, it happens pretty early in the movie and it just feels the sense of dread. I think dread is the best word to describe this movie. Cause, once that happens, you know that they're fucked. It's just a matter of when. And you feel for the lead character because he's still trying. I mean, he's got this crush on this girl, and it was going good for him. And then this happened, and it's like it takes a back seat, and he has to, you know, it's like, fuck, this sucks. And I don't know why. Maybe it's just my personality, but, man, I was, like, so looking forward to watching this again and throwing it back on and just, like, sometimes I just need it, you know? Sometimes I just need to watch something sad and moody and dreadful and feel that, like, let it wash over me. And this does that fucking trick. And when this came out, I was like, everybody go see this movie. I would not shut up about it because it was on, I think, Netflix streaming for a while. It might still be. It's streaming on a couple different things. And it was just like, I thought, you know, this is up there with, like, Donnie Darko and, you know, that kind of, like, teen angst type thing for me. I love it. I love the performances. I love the writing. I love all the characters. I just, everything, the cinematography, everything about it is, it just hits on a 10 for me. The dialogue, like, the way they interact with each other feels completely real. And, of course, now I'm an asshole because when we put this, when Mike put this on the list and we rewatched it, I went down, like, the rabbit hole, and I was like, I gotta see what else this director did. And I went down this long thing, and I'm trying to like do it again, but it just didn't seem like he did one more feature in 2019 called Three, and then he directed an episode of a television series called Monsterland, but he hasn't done he hasn't directed anything else really. I think Three isn't even, what is this? I was thinking it was like a music video or something. This is compelling for the listeners as I, it's a, let's see. I think it's a music video. Yeah. The Lumineers. It's a music video for the Lumineers, like a feature weird. I think it's a feature. Let's see. No, 45 minutes. So he hasn't even directed a feature since Super Dark Times. Like, how does he direct this and not instantly get hired by A24 to make their next thing? I will never know, but he's done cinematography for several things since then, for music videos and commercials. Like, what the fuck, guys? I don't get it, because it's fantastic. And then I followed, like, the leads and the actors, and they did stuff, but nothing like what I felt they should be doing. You know, it was like, this feels like, if you've ever watched Euphoria, like, this is in that vein of, like, all these kids are going to go far and do something big, and they didn't, and that sort of bums me out.
Yeah, it's wild. Wild.
But I adore this one, which is a weird word to describe it, because it is fucking depressing, and the title is very spot on. You have to be in the mood to watch it, so if you're not feeling great and you want to pick me up, this is not it at all. Yeah, I just love it. It feels like people talk about this all the time. They're like, we don't really have like adult movies anymore, like Taxi Driver and, you know, stuff like that. It's like, we just don't have good adult, like, dramatic movies. I'm like, yeah, we do. Here it is. Like,
for sure.
This is it, man. There's no humor in this, man. Like, I mean, outside of the kids giving each other shit, but this is not, you know, a horror comedy. This is just dread from.
Yes.
Yeah. And guess, man,
have you guys ever had a nightmare like that where you've had a dream where you did something on? Yes.
Unforgivable. Yep.
Yep. It was something that, you know, that it would alter your life forever and not in a good way. Yeah. And there's no going back from it.
And then you wake up and it's like the biggest sense of relief washes over you because you didn't like kill that animal or hurt that person or.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And so watching this movie, just it feels like one of those dreams for me. Yeah.
Because I mean, we've beat around the bush. If you've gotten this far, hit the pause button, go 30 seconds. But spoiler, when they kill their friend, I mean, obviously shit hit the fan. It was, you know, it went overboard in like a tussle. But, you know, then towards the end, shit, when he starts doing it for real and sort of likes it and goes off the hinges, it's like it takes it up a notch, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, I'm already this deep in, fuck it. Like,
and the kid that originally gets killed in the beginning, we all knew guys like that, right? High school?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's why I never owned a samurai sword. Anyway.
I found the list, Ted. You had it number 4.
Damn, yeah.
Nice.
There we go.
Well, what beat it?
I'll tell you. We got up before number 3, The Devil's Candy.
Yes, absolutely. Man, I want to rewatch that one again.
His number 2, Mother.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Number 1, Get Out.
We're in the middle of a show.
Nope.
Did it make my list at all?
Nope. Oh, it didn't make mine either, so
I must
have just missed it.
Well, I think,
didn't watch it. Or
I think Jason might have argued that it wasn't, like, he wasn't sure if it constituted completely as horror enough to make his list or something.
And again, I could see it. But again, like, there's movies that are definitively horror movies that don't give me as much dread and tension as this movie did. So, yeah. Any trivia for this one, Tad?
Ha, I'm prepared this time. not a whole lot. This is Kevin Phillips' directorial debut for a full-length film, and apparently his last, because he hasn't done one since. The first feature film for actor Max Talisman, who plays Daryl, the kid who gets the samurai sword. And then there's not a whole lot of trivia on this, but this is like someone trying to narrow down the exact year, which I think, Mike, you sort of like this kind of stuff. But the story takes place in an undisclosed year in the 90s. Earliest it could have been was 93, because Bill Clinton was on TV and set adrift on Memory Bliss being played in a girl's bedroom. But also, True Lies came out in 94, and it's being referenced as being rented, which has to be late 94 to 1995 at the earliest. But then also, Twisted Metal came out on November 5th, 1995, and they're playing it on the TV, so it has to be after that. And then the Primitive Radio God's Standing Outside a Broken Phone Booth song plays on the radio. That came out of March 96, so it has to be after that.
Wow. Awesome.
Someone went to, like, great, you know, pain to figure that out.
Well, there's a lot of people out there like that. I watch this series on YouTube called Horror Timelines. Really cool guy. I like him a lot. And like, he will like look for calendars on the wall. He'll look for license plates and do the research on the tags.
Uh-huh.
Find out like this color was used during this year.
Okay.
You know, that kind of stuff. So yeah, yeah. There's people out there to dig deep into that research.
And filmmakers are like, stop doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. You're making more work for us because we have to now pay attention to that shit.
It's like good news for people who want to be continuity like producers. Just people who just on set for continuity.
And, oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, Tad, what's our next movie we're going to talk about?
Our next movie is one I just recently talked about. It's just from last year, 2022, and it is Kids versus Aliens.
It's going to be a long one tonight, boys.
Jimmy?
Who's out there?
There's dinos set ahead! Let's teach them how to die!
Yeah! We should have a party.
We'll keep it small and your parents won't find out, I promise.
Just one of their stupid pranks! The reason to break up the party is... Oh!
The aliens were using human skin to fuel their spaceship.
I don't want my body to be alien fuel.
This means war.
Give us a fucking break already! Oh, fuck.
You want to dance?
Now, guys!
Fuck space.
Written by John Davies and Jason Eisner, directed by Jason Eisner. An all-time rager of a teen house party turns to terror when aliens attack, forcing two warring siblings to band together to survive the night. So this, like I said, 2022 sort of has that, I don't know how to explain it. There's like this modern take on nostalgia movies. Like it's supposed to feel like a throwback intentionally. So it's sort of, it has a lot of humor to it, but it's also the tone's all over the place. It's has its moments of terror. It has its moments of very sad, somber, because you feel for these characters. But very much, you know, older sister, little brother, and his friends, little kids who like to make their little movies. She's struggling to grow up, coming of age, where a popular kid is hitting on her. And then we throw aliens into the mix. I really like this one. I mean, if you're really going to get Kids versus Aliens, Attack the Block is the king of that. But
this is
still a lot of fun. I watched this probably a month or so ago and mentioned on the show. So I was like, hopefully that will nudge other guys to watch it. And then you gave us an excuse to rewatch it. So
yep, the whole episode was based around me wanting to watch this movie.
And the tagline of Fuck Space that's on the poster at the very top is really cool. It has that like overly saturated look to it. The aliens are very rubber suity. Neons, you know, fun costumes because they set it on Halloween. I think this is almost like, you know, you could almost say this is like, if we're doing that gateway thing again, you could have like Monster Squad up to the gate, and this is like the cocaine because this has, you know.
Yes, definitely.
But it's not quite heroin because it doesn't have like nudity. It doesn't have, but it has melting people. It drops lots of F-bombs.
It's go, go, go.
Yeah, it's go, go. It never stops. So it's definitely, and I love that it's like, it could be its own movie it's own movie until the aliens come, and then it switches movies.
Yeah,
and it's like it's like literally throwing aliens into a movie that was already existing and going on the story. I cared about it, and then you threw the aliens into the mix. But I had a lot of fun. I'm sort of scared to hear what you guys thought.
Well, let me go a second. Oh man, he's pointing the camera at me. So it took me a while to get into this one. That's what the problem is with this one for me. And there's no problem. I mean, I eventually got there and I liked it, but
say it's 75 minutes. You don't have much time.
That's true. But the first part of the movie, it just wasn't doing it for me. I thought it was too heavy-handed. I thought it was they knew what they were doing too much, you know. But by the time the second half comes, I fucking loved it. I mean, how often do you get like badass aliens as the creature monster that can just fucking walk up and grab you by the head and fucking, they made aliens scary as fuck.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. Like,
it was awesome.
The designs of the aliens are fairly simple, nothing over the top, but very effectively creepy.
Super scary, yeah. And you know, there's a little bit of bad taste in there. I mean, there's homages all over this movie, and again, a little much for me, but I know you guys love that shit. And the score is cool. You know, the neon's cool. The there's kids on bikes in the poster. I didn't like the Captain America kid, the guy that looks like, what's his name?
The asshole.
Yes, I.
Yeah,
well, and I know he's supposed to be.
They could not have written a
but
more piece of shit character than that.
But
guy.
It made me hate the movie, not just him.
No, I know. I agree. Like it kind of. I mean, I'll let you finish. But I just want to say I love this movie. But it almost does ruin the movie on how bad this guy is. I'll go into more detail about that.
Yeah.
Thought
so
later,
all his shit in the beginning made me just not. It just. Made it harder for me to get there, but once the aliens came and they started terrorizing, and I really started to grow to love those three little kids, and then I really hooked on to the main girl. She brought me back away from that asshole to like really caring about what the hell's happening, hoping to get out of this situation. What's going to happen? And I loved it by the end, but man, it just took me a minute to get there. But yeah, it's pretty great. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I was saying, like the asshole guy can almost ruin this movie for you because he is that much of a piece of crap character.
Lays it on thick. There's no redeeming. No.
Never. Not even after him. The shit hits the fan.
Nope.
Is there any redeeming qualities? And also, I feel like if you're gonna have that much of a jerk character. His comeuppance needs to be way more epic than what they did, I felt like.
Yeah.
So I felt a little cheated.
She wanted him to die so hard.
Like that's it? I want to see him like rip limb from limb. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Exactly.
Turn inside out or something.
Yep. But I did really enjoy this movie. I'm really nervous right now because I feel like things I'm going to say sound like I'm pissing on the movie. So I just want to keep emphasizing that I like this movie. I had a lot of fun with it. But Jason Eisner, love the work he's doing. Mm-hmm. I really, really do. I love a lot of his stuff. However, I will say, and this is still kind of a compliment, but it's not going to sound like it. He makes these like 80s homages, like as a guy who's never seen an 80s movie. Like all the aesthetics are there, but it's so over the top. That it's like, this is not what an 80s movie looked like. You know, 80s movies, yeah, there was neon, but the whole movie wasn't shot with neon, you know? And all of his stuff is kind of like that. Hobo with a Shotgun, Turbo Kid, one of the greatest Christmas short films of all time, Treevenge.
Oh, fuck yeah, I know, I saw that.
Yeah. So he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And it's his style, and that's okay.
Yeah.
So I'm not really complaining. I'm just describing it. You know, it's 80s homage.
It's a kitchen sink 80s homage.
It's as if the guy was giving a list of This is what the 80s is known for without doing the research on what an 80s movie actually looks like. But I know he knows his stuff, though, too.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, Treevenge alone. When you open your movie with the theme song to Cannibal Holocaust, I know you know what you're doing. So, anyway, I was into it right away because, anytime you got kids making their own little movies,
I'm
into it and I'm absorbed and I'm, you know, I mean, some of it at times, I think maybe I wonder if part of your problem though, Jason, is with some of that first half of the stuff is that chaos energy of the shots and the editing.
Yep.
Like sometimes it's hard to even focus on what you're looking at because the camera's all over the place and the cuts are quick.
Really is a benefit to the movie.
Yeah, it's true. But in that first half, do you need that then?
Right.
And it could be distracting and take you out. Because I just wanted to see more on a grander scale of this little homemade production that they're doing. But it's just editing and music and all this stuff,
The kinetic energy in this movie is off the charts.
Yeah. And I feel like a lazy human being that I wish we would have put this much production value in our homemade movies when I made as a kid. I challenge any.
I know.
It's so dumb. So over the top in their production value to make it look like there's no production value with having way too many homemade over the top props and a wrestling ring in their own barn. Yeah. Like, I mean,
it's not fair.
Exactly. What the hell? But
it definitely has like an ADHD like editing storytelling. I mean, like I said, 75 minutes. It feels like a feature length short, like something you would see at one of our film festivals. But they made it, which, you know, spoiler, it was based on a short from VHS 2.
The one where aliens attack a kid's birthday party.
Yes.
Or the camera is on the dog, is mounted on the dog through the VHS 2 segment, which is also great. Probably one of my favorite segments of VHS 2. So this, it's a lot of fun, and especially when you get into the alien stuff, and and part of me just wants to know even more about this alien mythology. Like, how does this goo melt some people but then turn other people into like the guy's other best aliens. Friend into yeah, some kind alien. Of monster that goes on a rampage. It's all forgiven because it's just craziness, fun craziness, but there's part of me is like, I want to know more. Anyway,
sequel.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, great movie. I feel like everything I said about it is coming off as more harsh. But what I'm really saying, everything I'm saying negative, that sounds negative. I'm meaning to be complimentary to the film, honestly. I'm really enjoying Jason Eisner's body work, and I hope he gets to keep doing stuff. I was excited when I saw this was him because he hadn't done anything in a while that I've seen, so keep going.
He directed 30 episodes and produced Dark Side of the Ring.
That's right. Yeah, I forgot that. He was the director in Dark Side of the Ring. So
that probably paid the bills for him way better than any of these indie movies.
Guaranteed, but I still feel like
the producer on those too, so he clearly is invested in them.
Yeah. This is a guy who loves everything that we all love, so more power to him.
Really fun movie.
Mm-hmm.
On Shudder, right?
Yep, Shudder.
Yep, Shudder exclusive.
Yeah. What trivia is there for this one, Tad?
The character of Samantha is based on director Jason Eisner's older sister. Again, based on the short titled Slumber Party Alien Abduction from VHS 2. Let's see. The story initially took place in the summer in an earlier draft of the script. This was eventually changed to autumn because the film was shot in December. It was filmed in the house owned by Jason Eisner's parents. The extras for the Halloween party were students from theater school. The story of this film was inspired by the famous Shag Harbor UFO incident that occurred in Canada in October 1967. And the scenes in the alien slime chamber were done in 2 days. So he's still very much like a low-budget DIY filmmaker after all this time. But I think that's really cool. Like, it sort of shows sometimes. It has that almost Joe Bagos feel where it's like...
Yep, I wanted to almost, say that.
Yeah, handheld a lot. And, you know, again, oversaturated. Sort of has real rough around the edges, but I think that's fun.
Yep.
But, you know, way too many color gels at times, but it's all good.
Bite your tongue. That doesn't even register to me. More gels. All right. Well, that's it for the topic of this episode, guys. But hold on. Don't click to the next podcast yet. There's still more Attack of the Killer podcast to come. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we are going to finish off with a couple more segments. But first, you're going to hear a promo for our podcast network, the Postscribe Films Podcast Network. The PFPN is home to over 30 shows, including The Movie Defenders. The Movie Defenders is a podcast which discusses the positive aspects of popular movies. Most movie review podcasts spend their entire time tearing down the movie you love instead of celebrating them. They take popular movies that have been ridiculed by critics and defend them. So come listen to a fun discussion of the movies you love, or perhaps reconsider a movie again that you didn't like as much as you wish you did. If you like movies, you found the only podcast with movie reviews that loves them as much as you do. I'm actually still in the middle of listening to their latest episode, Death Becomes Her. And I was excited because I've always felt like I'm one of the few people on this planet that loves Death Becomes Her. So, and when you see a movie pop up that they're doing, you know, you can be excited because you know it's going to be a positive review.
Yep.
You know? So listen to the Movie Defenders and all the other shows at thepfbn.com. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back. And now it's time to hear from you guys, the listeners. Here's Jason with shoutouts.
It's time for
shoutouts.
All right, we asked, what are your favorite kids on bikes horror movies? And these are your comments, your shout-outs. Up first, we got Tim Lennerer. He's always up first. I swear he's just like sits around and waits for us to post shout-out questions. He's always the first one on there. It's awesome. Thanks, Tim. He says, and you'll like this, he says, The Gate from 1987 is a lot of fun, a great entry-level horror movie for kids. And has those strangely cute little demon creatures played by adults in costumes, but they look about 6 inches tall thanks to forced perspective shots.
Those little fellas.
They're all little fellas to me.
Yeah.
Up next, we got attacker Emily Randolph. She says, The Babysitter was the most recent one I enjoyed the most, but it still doesn't surpass The Monster Squad.
Monsters.
Heck yeah.
I can't believe that was on, like, looking back on our list, that made Jason's list. That somehow didn't make my list that year for 2017. Same year as Super Dark Times.
Yeah.
Huh.
Nuts.
Jason was right.
I'm clipping that audio out.
Man.
Thank you. Up next.
I'm going to put that on a loop.
We got Nick Leadham. He says, Lost Boys is pretty far up there for me. He's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's right. That was on our Facebook group page. Let's go to the main page. We got, hey, it's attacker Abe Kirshner.
What's up, Abe?
What's up, Mike? He says, also said, right after that, he said, super dark times, 2 exclamations.
Yep, he knows. Yeah.
Thanks, Tad, and I mean that sincerely. And though it isn't horror, really, Turbo Kid deserves all the shout-outs. It was one of my...
Literally, kids on bikes, yeah.
Yeah. It was one of my proudest blind pick moments on our old podcast. Oh, man, that would be it. If you had nailed that blind pick, that had to be great. And lastly, on Facebook, we got Attacker Rose, she says, slash back on Shudder.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And she also says, Stephen King's It.
Yep.
Hell yeah. Let's see. Nothing over on Instagram. Nothing on Twitter. Oh, but that little red light's blinking.
Hey, everybody. Attacker Brian here for my bi-weekly phone call. And I usually call, listen, stupid movies that maybe me and Brian Clark and on the off chance Andy had heard of, you know, but I'm going to get a little more serious this episode. So, y'all know we lost Andy not too long ago, and I had become Andy's friend through podcasting and our love of stupid 80s action horror movies. Clowntergeist, that's a joke. No one likes that movie. But I had become Andy's friend, and Andy is going to be missed. There's not many people in the world with that much talent. Me included. I don't have the talent in my whole body that man had in his little finger. But the world's a sadder place without him around, and we're all going to miss him. I hope someday I get to see him again, and he can do Don Knotts or any one of his many great impressions for me and make me laugh. And I have very fond memories of him, and I think we're all blessed that AOTKP, Attack of the Killer podcast, is not only a podcast, but it's a family. And I love every one of you, even if I've only met you once, or if I've only talked to you a couple times online, we are a family. Spend some time with your family, throw on a good horror movie or a bad 80s action movie, and take care. Tell the ones you love that you love them. Bye-bye.
Aw, well, thanks, Godzilla. Well, you know we love you.
We love you too, buddy.
We definitely miss Andy.
Yep, sure do.
Okay, and if you want to leave sad, sappy bullshit fucking voicemails like Godzilla just did.
Call someone else.
Yeah. But if you want to, you can. And it's 415-952-6857. 415-95-AOTKP. Leave us that shitty voicemail. We'll play it. We'll do it. And that is shout-outs. But we're not done yet, folks. One more segment to go. It's time for Insane's Picks.
No other producer has contributed to the films that qualify for Insane's Picks more than Roger Corman. This time, teaming up with another alum of Insane's Picks, Paul Bartel, for the 1975 action, comedy, sci-fi, sports, road film, Death Race 2000. Produced by Roger Corman, directed by Paul Bartel, starring an amazing collection of actors such as David Carradine as Frankenstein, the greatest racer in the world, Mary Warnoff as Calamity Jane, Roberta Collins as Matilda the Hun, Martin Cove as Nero the Hero, the real Don Steele as the race announcer, Joyce Jameson as Grace Pander, which is a little on the nose on that character name, and a very young Sylvester Stallone in one of his earlier performances as Machine Gun Joe, just to name a few. This movie takes place in a dystopian American society in the year 2000, hence the title. After the world crash of 1979, civil unrest and economic ruin takes over. The government is restructured into a totalitarian regimen under martial law. To pacify the American population, the government created the murderous transcontinental road race. The race is where a group of drivers from across the country, they race across the country in their high-powered cars, and which is infamous for violence, gore, and innocent pedestrians being struck and killed for bonus points. I love the overtop characters and the cars in this movie. The racers kind of have a professional wrestling style to their personas. There's, of course, Frankenstein, the mysterious champion, all dressed in black, hiding his face because it's horribly disfigured. Of course, when he takes the mask off, it's just David Carradine's face. Machine Gun Joe, a Chicago tough guy gangster. Calamity Jane, a cowgirl complete with giant bullhorns on the front of her car. Matilda the Hun, a neo-Nazi who believes the master races women. And Nero the Hero, a pretty boy Roman gladiator. A resistance group of rebels rebels against the regimen by sabotaging the race, killing most of the drivers, and taking Frankenstein hostage as leverage against Mr. President. Roger Corman wanted to make a futuristic action sports film to take advantage of the publicity around the upcoming film Rollerball from 1975. Roger Corman wanted Peter Fonda to play the lead, but he read the script and said it was too ridiculous to make, so David Carradine got casted instead. Paul Bartel and Roger Corman had a disagreement over the comedy. Roger took a lot of the comedy out in a lot of scenes, which does give the film a little bit of an odder tone, although I still feel that this is mostly a comedy. The humor is often in your face with over-the-top characters and crazy cars and the cartoony violence. Like one of my favorite scenes where at the hospital, nurses and doctors wheel out the elderly and put them in the street for Frankenstein to run over. But Frankenstein turns at the last second and actually runs over all the nurses and doctors instead, causing them to fly through the air as if they were bouncing on trampolines. Or, in more subtle comedy, like in one of the first scenes where we meet Frankenstein, America's hero, the scene transitions from the news reporter saying, "And everybody loves him," cut straight to a group of fans in the stands, all holding Nazi flags. The film is very 1970s with the look of what a dystopian future what they thought a dystopian future would look like, with bright colors, wild costumes, bright sunny days, unlike the burning landscapes we get with dark and gloomy shots that we get in dystopian films nowadays. It's a very fun and fast-paced film with enough car action, violence, and laughs to make this film a continual watch for me that I come back to time and time again. So if you haven't seen it before, check it out. It's on Tubi. Death Race 2000. Woo, woo, woo. So that is it, folks, for another episode of Attack of the Killer Podcast. I want to thank everybody for listening. Special thanks to the attackers for keeping the show going. Really appreciate it.
They're pretty awesome.
They are super, super cool. Find us, if you want to find more about us, find us on YouTube, our YouTube channel. We have Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and our name is even written on many bathroom walls. So hope you all take care of yourselves, live your lives to the fullest, and we will talk to you on the next full episode of Attack of the Killer Podcast.
Oh no, could this be the end of?
Attack of the Killer Podcast. Attack!